welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. All preaching must rely on God's Word as final authority. Now, this is true on the subject of capital punishment. This theme is widely discussed, and Christians must know the will of God regarding it. Ignorance of God's will leads to disregard of its solemn demands, and will allow mankind to drift on the sea of sentimentality rather than to be firmly anchored in the harbor of truth. Capital punishment means, as the Latin signifies, punishment which takes the head. It means death to the convicted violator of law. It means the life of the offender is justifiably taken by duly ordained authority, which is civil government, and his life is forfeited as punishment for his crime. It does not refer to taking life illegally or without authority, as individuals taking matters into their own hands for revenge, or lynch mobs, or such things as that. It refers to that which is executed by government according to authorized procedures. In Genesis 9, verses 5 and 6, "And surely your blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man. At the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man." Now, after the flood at the time of Noah, before the thunder and lightning that accompanied the giving of the Mosaic Law, God expressed his attitude toward capital punishment, especially when the crime committed was murder. There is nothing in this command that implies or explains or infers the principle was merely a local, national, or temporary principle. This was not given to any one specific or special nation. It was given to all people. We shall show that this principle applies even under the guidance of the New Testament. Now, the reason for capital punishment is because of the dignity and the sacredness of human life. Notice, "For in the image of God made he man." Those who do not respect the dignity and sacredness of human life and take life forfeit their right to live. Just so long as man is in the image of God will this law of capital punishment be the will of God. Only when the reason for it becomes untrue will the law become invalid. Ironic as it may appear, God grants the right to take life from those who do not respect human life. It is a law designed to protect life by removing from life those who do not have proper respect for human life. There are those, of course, who oppose capital punishment. Now, they have various reasons which, upon close scrutiny, prove to lack validity. History reveals a fluctuating sentiment regarding capital punishment. Presently, it seems to flow against it. For nearly 200 years, our government practiced capital punishment, and still allows it in many instances. It was accepted in every responsible mind as legal, civil, moral, and certainly recognized as constitutional. Now it is questioned, and in many ways human life is disposed of without fear of severe recriminations. Divine law, however, has not changed on this point, and even our Constitution has not changed. But man's unwillingness to abide by the law has changed. In our present world, we have conditions of permissiveness and distortion of law, even by judicial authorities. Many think it is their duty to overturn whatever has been before their own time. Protection for morality and human dignity has been virtually destroyed in many instances, just as it was with Judah and northern Israel before the fall of those nations. Filth is denied to be filth. Drunkenness is considered a mere disease. Pornography is called art. Profanity runs at high tide. Freedom is interpreted to be license. Marriage and the home are under attack as archaic institutions. Friend, we live in a time where the woes of God certainly apply. Isaiah 5 and verse 20, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. In many instances, our courts have become so lenient with the criminal and indifferent to the rights of actual and potential victims. Even the slightest clerical miscues can allow a vicious, savage criminal to go free after arrogantly and defiantly committing crime after crime against innocent people. Such is the reality of our present nation. Only God knows where this degeneracy in high and low places will take us and how long He will permit His blessings to flow in spite of our sinfulness. But this we do know. Regardless of man's thinking, God will remain unchanged. God's standard of morality does not vary with the customs of man, nor are they affected by human sentimentality and pseudo-intellectualism and the misrepresentations of what is called love. Now, some argue that the Ten Commandments say, "Thou shalt not kill," and this is certainly true. Yet the same God, to the same people, under the same authority, commissioned death for certain crimes. The commandment did not forbid capital punishment. It does not forbid taking human life in all circumstances. What is forbidden is murder, not merely the taking of human life. All killing of humans is not murder. People often die as a result of accidents, in self-defense, or even in war. There are 7 Hebrew words translated by our English word kill. There are at least that many in the Greek language also. But one word in particular is used when the command not to kill is given, and that is the word meaning murder. This does not therefore forbid legal, moral, and oft-commanded executions, whether in the line of law enforcement or national preservation. Punitive killing by proper authorities is not murder. We have no right to close our eyes to this reality and truth if we really want to know what the will of God is. You may oppose capital punishment if you choose, but you will have to found other grounds than "thou shalt not kill." Some argue that the possibility of an innocent one being executed should remove capital punishment altogether. We must grant that possibly, even with all precautions that can be taken, innocent ones may die. That such has happened, we would not deny. But the abuse and the misuse of capital punishment and the change of human error was just as great when God gave the law. But He still gave it. The possibility of human error is not sufficient to repeal or to dismiss, to set aside, or to ignore divine will. The abuse of a thing does not dispose of the valid use of a thing. God's law allowing capital punishment remains firmly entrenched. Now, some contend it does not deter crime. Now, this may have some validity. It is practiced so inconsistently and infrequently, how could one really know? Only proper teaching that changes the hearts of men can really prevent and deter crime, although the fear of punishment does tend to deter crime. Remove all punishments for all crimes, and you will soon see that punishment does deter crime. But capital punishment is not primarily to be a deterrent to crime anyway, but a punishment for crime. Since much crime is committed by repeaters, it would deter them once they were executed. Even the warnings of hell do not keep some people from sinning. But hell is a deterrent, but more a punishment. And the same is true with capital punishment. One reason capital punishment is not more effective as a deterrent is because it is not practiced consistently and persistently and with reasonable speed. The legal red tape, the weak administration of criminal law, the emphasis on the so-called rights of criminals rather than the wrongs of criminals against those who are victims has destroyed much of the criminal's fear of punishment, even capital punishment. Our laws and officials allow indefinite appeals from decisions and convictions of guilt. Some crimes have gone unpunished for years on end, even though the criminal has been convicted and the penalty specified. This is why capital punishment does not work, if it does not work. Misnamed mercy has become an excuse for calamitous injustice that tends to encourage, if not condone, crime. It is even the case quite often that the news media make martyrs out of the criminals as they face their just due. What kind of society have we become? The United States reels and sways under the effect of drug addiction and similar crimes. In some countries where the death penalty is exacted for drug peddling illicitly, the use of drugs is minimal. Does not this demonstrate the invalidity of the claim that the death penalty does not deter crime? It would be a blessing if our nation adopted the death penalty for a number of crimes. This would cleanse the nation of much dross. Nations where capital punishment is reasonably and speedily executed, without the English endless wrangles over irrelevant matters, murder is 10 times less prevalent per capita than in our so-called enlightened but permissive society. But capital punishment is primarily to punish. The deterrent to crime that certainly follows is a beneficial byproduct. But some contend that capital punishment is against Christian love. They think it's inhumane, lacking compassion. And some even have gone so far as to say it's racist. But the same God who ordains capital punishment is the author of love. When considering love, why should we not consider love for God, and love for truth, and love for justice, and love for victims, and love for the innocent, and love for potential victims? Why is the only love some consider is their misguided and misdirected, misinformed and malpracticed love toward those who have shown no love toward their fellow man? It is not love to give license to evil, to encourage it or condone it. It is not love to remain passive as wickedness runs rampant over the land, subverting male and female, rich and poor, young and old. Love for the criminal is not the all-transcending love. There are others who love, loves that take priority over indulgence of those who decide to criminalize society. Every passage, without exception, that is used to reject capital punishment, legal coercive force, defensive warfare, self-defense, is in the context of forbidding personal vengeance and retaliation, prohibiting one from taking the law into his own hands. Or the passage refers to the operation of God's spiritual kingdom, not the operation of God-ordained civil government. To apply any passage in this kind of fashion would be to misapply it. But some complain that Genesis 9, 5, and 6, which we read earlier, was before Christ. What about under Christ? Well, the New Testament affirms this same position of capital punishment. In Matthew 26, 52 through 54, after Peter had used his sword, cutting off the ear of the servant of the high priest, Jesus told him to put the sword in its place, because it was not Peter's prerogative to take the law into his own hands. He did not say there was no place for the sword to be used. In fact, the Apostle Paul affirms the sword is borne by civil government properly. The sword represented the power to kill. But Christ told Peter to sheathe it because he did not have the right to use it. What Peter was trying to do was out of place at that time, because Scripture was being fulfilled. The sword was not to be used for personal retaliation, lest those who so use it also perish in the same manner. Friend, if you will read Romans 13, 1 through 7, you will see that government is ordained of God, and that government can use the sword, and it does not bear it in vain. This is a specific organization by God for government to use physical force, such as the sword, an instrument of death, to enforce its laws and preserve its control. God never gave government the right to do something immoral, but He did ordain capital punishment by civil authorities. Christians are to support the government in that practice. Acts 21 and 23 was an instance where the power of the sword was employed for the protection of Paul. Paul never denounced its use, nor intimated that the sinfulness of those who used it was wrong because they used it. Paul was not one to do wrong or allow wrong so that good might come. In Acts chapter 25, verse 10 and 11, while pleading innocent of violations, Paul said that he was willing to die if guilty as charged. He did not suggest the government did not have the right to take his life if he were guilty, but he showed his willingness to submit to the right the government had. Regardless, the persecutors of the church, Revelation 13 and verse 10, the principle is again affirmed. Such power is not, however, for personal vengeance, but it is the tool of the vengeance of God through government, as is taught in Romans 12 and verse 19. We indeed have sympathy for those who commit crimes that properly call for their death. But our sympathy, or lack of it, is not really the question here. Whatever nations may do regarding capital punishment is one thing, but there is no room for doubt regarding God's will. His will remains as expressed near the beginning of human existence. His law is still in force and will remain so even if men and nations resist it. We only prove ourselves fools to think that we know better about such things than the one who gave us all things. Unless and until we properly apply the rules that God has decreed, we shall continue to sow to the wind and reap the whirlwind. And we're seeing the tragic results in our own society and in our own day of the disavowal of the propriety of capital punishment. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.